Welcome to Geographical Thinking, a podcast full of ideas, stories, and conversations through the lens of geography. I'm your host, Guan Yu. You can have all the data in the world, but it's useless until you can turn it into actionable insights. Our guest today is an expert in using statistics, mathematics, and geography to distill all kinds of data into strategy and results. Jen Kessel founded Emronix Analytics over 20 years ago and has helped customers ranging from finance and retail to government agencies to wrangle the power from data. Hello, Jen, and welcome to Geographical Thinking.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
You started Emronix Analytics, EA, over 20 years ago when big data and analytics weren't typically front page news. Tell me, what's the opportunity you saw back then?
Well, interestingly enough, when I started Emronix Analytics, I'd already been working with data and statistics for almost three decades, because I believe that data and information really are crucial to decision-making and good business decision-making. So when we founded Emronix Analytics, we had been already working with data and statistics, census data, the early days of geodemography. And we saw an evolution. You know, the business community has attempted, the business community and the research community together have attempted to use whatever data are available to them. And originally, you know, we had census data for looking at small areas, and that was pretty much it. We had surveys for looking at general trends. But over the course of the 80s and 90s in the last century, you know, we had methodologies that enabled us to combine different kinds of data and really get information about what people and subgroups and consumers were doing. Starting around the late 90s and the early 2000s, organizations like businesses and governments and not-for-profits had a lot of information about the people that they were engaged with. And they had it in CRM systems or sales systems where they actually knew, you know, who the individuals were and what they purchased. What we saw when we founded Emronix Analytics was an opportunity to continue to bring different kinds of data together to help organizations get one view of their constituents or their customers and find more ways to reach them. For me in 2003, the real objective was to continue to help Canada be more data-driven. We were just really anxious to take it to the next step.
Right. What I'm hearing is bringing a lot of these disparate data sources together and to weave it into a common context so that businesses can be more data driven. They will have the capability to be able to understand better of their own data in this context that are provided by all of these different data sources.
So yeah, I think it's really important not to talk about which kind of data is better. You know, what's important is to use the right data for the right purpose with something that you can actually get learning out of and activate against and make a difference. And so it's not a question of, is postal code data better or worse than my actual first party data about what my clients do? Or, you know, is geodemography better than surveys? The reality is that all kinds of data can help inform different decisions. And part of our job is to help organizations understand what's fit for purpose and also fit for budget, because right. You don't have to do, you know, you don't need a Cadillac to drive across the road.
Right. So I wanted to talk a bit about your flagship product, also the first product you launched called PRIZM, P-R-I-Z-M. What does this stand for?
Well, first of all, PRIZM is an old brand that belongs to a company in the U.S. called Claritas. And the PRIZM product for Canada belongs to Emronix Analytics. So the name PRIZM actually stands for Profiles and Rankings to Inform Zip Markets. That was in the 1970s when organizations were targeting customers by zip code. So it's a multidimensional variable taking into account demographics, lifestyle, behavior that enables marketers and analysts to understand, you know, what people care about and who they are demographically, what they read, watch, buy in their spare time, so that organizations can really engage, not just in terms of messaging, but in terms of offering products and offering services.
Right. Can you give us an example of one neighborhood and the characteristics of the population living there? And how would marketers or service providers speak better to that population?
You know, I'll take an example of one of our PRISM segments. It's called Downtown Verve. And it's, first of all, segment number 6 out of 67. So this number 6 connotes that it's very high in socioeconomic status. We also know that it's in a category called U1, urban elite. So that means that these individuals are mostly found in, you know, major urban centers, and the urbanity categories go urban, urban fringe, suburban, town, and rural. So this automatically connotes these are people who live in more urban areas. The fact that it's elite is that it is in a high income category. We also know about this segment that they're school age families and that they have school age families, and then they can either be young or sort of approaching middle age, singles and couples with kids. Then we have, you know, 7 paragraphs that describe that PRISM segment. And then we have, you know, a lookup file that gives us 10 pages of graphs and charts.
There are two aspects of the PRISM product that I picked up. One is all of these variables that you modeled into this product. It's about people's behavior. It's about their, you know, shopping tendencies. It's about their education. A lot of attributes that are integrated into the product. The other side of it is about the where, right? You have these 67 segments, and basically you're taking the whole country of Canada and say, for this particular segment, where are these groups in Canada? So tell me a bit about the relationship between geography and data, because now big data is on the news every day. Yet when we are talking about data, very few people will think about geography. But you said geography is the secret sauce of EA, Evronic Analytics. So I wonder if you can help us unpack the relationship a little bit more here.
Well, you know, there's some old truisms that in the industry for a long time, like location, location, location. And my favorite one that Esri had as a motto in, I don't know, the 80s or 90s is everything happens somewhere. And that's really true. PRISM is a classification of 6-digit postal codes. So it's inherently geographic. But the geography is important whether, as a marketer or an analyst, geography is part of your paradigm. So let me give you an example. You know, consumer packaged goods manufacturers, they have some because of loyalty programs and others, but for the most part, they don't have a lot of detailed information about who's buying their products. The grocers have that information, but they want to link together, you know, the distribution of their products at the store level with what kind of advertising campaigns that they spend on TV and in bus shelters. And so, again, knowing the geographic location of where the information comes from allows us to link disparate data sources together. For example, there's a very large amount of very rich survey data in Canada. You know, we have private sector surveys, we have surveys from Statistics Canada, and those sample surveys might be, even a good survey might be 5,000 people, it might be 20. There might be some great surveys that are based on, you know, 50,000 people. But if you're trying to take the behavior that you're measuring in a survey and figure out what happens for 750,000 postal codes, your sample size isn't big enough. But if we can make some assumptions using a tool like PRISM, that people generally behave according to their type, and we prove all the time that they do. And it's not to say that there isn't an exception, but people generally are like their neighborhood. When we combine that with survey data, we know the characteristics and the geographic area of the survey respondents. And traditional market research techniques to weight and normalize those data enable us to say, well, if this is the response to a battery of survey questions by PRISM, and these are the people who live in areas that are coded to PRISM, and then combine some other variable like how much money they spend in that neighborhood from other sources, then you can create this triangulation of data and make an estimate of, you know, who in a trade area around a grocery store is more likely to buy, you know, packaged cereal. And so for manufacturers, like car companies and manufacturers who may not be marketing one-to-one and thinking about where customers live, geography becomes the link that we use at Environics to leverage all of that behavior data.
What I'm hearing is geography and the data, PRISM data in the geography form really enables marketers and organizations who provided services to interpret their survey, which may be very specific and limited in scope. They give them the tool to interpret it and find similar markets because the similarities of people's behavior. So it's really a tool to help them scale their insights and to be able to interpret what they found in their surveys.
So they can do that with their own surveys, but we also do it with the most important, most widely used syndicated surveys that are done in Canada. So we do the heavy lifting of that data projection for them. But you're right, we also, if organizations have surveys and the sample size is large enough, then we can make a projection for them about what happens locally.
Environics Analytics launched a popular product built from cell phone mobility data. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so we have a product called MobileScapes. We source location data tied to a timestamp from multiple vendors who provide us data that are permissioned, and they come in every morning, huge feeds of phone movement behavior. We've built models and tools through a lot of research. We've been working with this big phone movement data for more than 5 years ahead of the market. And when we produced MobileScapes, we knew that we had to combine sources. We knew we had to wait and normalize the raw data. And we also knew that we wanted to use the data as input to models to make sure that the outputs were highly reliable, but also highly compliant. We don't just want to be obeying the privacy laws. We want to be ahead of them. And right. So in order to achieve that, we just received the ISO 31700 ISO standard certification for privacy by design. We're the second company in Canada to achieve that. It was a very heavy lift, but it's a very important thing because when we're using phone data, we have to make sure not only are the permissions there when the data come in, but we have to make sure that the processes provide accurate data because there's a lot of noise. And then finally, we have to make sure that when we do release patterns of people's shopping behavior or attending events or, you know, travel behavior, tourism behavior, all those things that we release in our MobileScapes and related products, we have to make sure that there's no possibility of re-identifying or, you know, breaking that trust that we have or that our data sources have with people who give them the data. So pretty exciting, pretty challenging. We have a lot of people working on it. One of the key things about MobileScapes is that we do a weekly update and we can look at the patterns by day of week, by day part, and we can make that data much more current, which is very important for data-driven decision-making.
In your user conference, people present really interesting use cases of MobileScape data. One is about people's use of the parks. Which part of the parks are used more than others? And where are these people coming from? And the other one is about returning to work in downtown areas. Can you give us more examples of how MobileScape data are used by your communities?
You know, people have a lot of information about who's coming into their locations, but not so much about who's going to their competitors. So these data allow a retailer to actually see the volumes and the patterns for both themselves on a, you know, day of the week or at a time of day. Another interesting one that was at the user conference was looking at the patterns of where people went when they had to evacuate because of the forest fires, and helping the emergency response and the municipal organizations plan for getting people back into Kelowna after the forest fires. So there's a lot of public use as well. And then finally, you know, we have a lot of organizations who look at that mobile movement data to think about operations like store hours, and even, you know, when can we open, when can we close, when should we offer deliveries, and those kinds of things. And staffing, you know, if I'm seeing, you know, the patterns by time of day, then this becomes not just a marketer's tool, but becomes a store operator's tool as well.
That's very interesting. Another one that I'm really interested to learn more is the new to Canada. It's about new immigrants. Given that immigrants is such a big part of the population growth of Canada, and they fuel, you know, a large part of the economy, I wonder, what are you trying to do with this new product?
You know, the immigrant community in Canada is the engine of our growth. And when we look at the large numbers that we're seeing this year in the projected, they're very large, but they're not that much out of sync. If you start to look at how many people in our communities are either first or second generation immigrants, it's well over 50% in many, many communities. So understanding all these populations is very, very important. But what's particularly important now is if we're bringing, you know, 700,000 or a million people every year into Canada, how do we ensure that they're settling in communities, that they're getting the services they need from a social service point of view, from an employment point of view, and also from a marketing point of view, that the products and services that are key to them when they arrive in Canada are available. So we have been taking data from IRCC, data that comes from government administrative records that show quarterly, and in some cases monthly, the number of permits issued, the temporary work permits to students and temporary foreign workers, and the number of new permits issued to permanent residents. We all know some general patterns that we know the countries where of origins that people had typically come from. But immediately when we look at this more current data, we can see there are new source countries. You know, it used to be that India and China, you know, kind of were very large and the rest were small. Now India is very, very large. And then there's a second tier of countries that are, you know, large sources. And then there are emerging sources of immigration like Nigeria that, you know, if we don't look at this more current data, people aren't aware that there are some significant groups. And then these groups of newcomers tend to live in areas where their countrymen live, their friends or relatives, and has to do, maybe it's not that they know someone, but someone's recommended, or it's terms of affordability or the kinds of jobs. So as well as understanding the new sources of immigration, we can see that although the bulk are still going to Toronto, Vancouver, and some Montreal, we can see both from the demographic data and this new to Canada data, we can see people going to different places. And some of that is because some provinces have put some, you know, employment incentives in place, and because for some temporary workers, there's some job opportunities. And then of course we know that students come on temporary visas often come and stay. So looking at these patterns from the immigration data and running it through our statistical models is enabling us to produce quarterly view of where people are coming from and where they're settling.
People have certain local knowledge, right? They would know which immigration group tend to live where. But when you scale it to the whole country and you're trying to move fast for this immigration wave and new, you know, people coming in, such a tool such as New to Canada, it offers tremendous value to be able to look at everything at a national level.
So not just the local. Well, you raise a good point. What, you know, what the success of a lot of data and analytics right now is to have a national strategy, to have a product strategy. It does impact price. It does impact your promotion strategy. But having a data that can allow you to go from the big picture down to subgroups or, you know, down to different geographic levels and actually have that connectivity with the people that you're trying to reach at a hyper-local level, that's when we say the geography is the secret sauce, because you can put it in a framework and then you can bring it right down to where you can actually make a difference in your service delivery.
I want to ask you about your thoughts on big data. What kind of disruption does it bring to what you do?
It's disrupting, yes, but also creating amazing opportunities. So I may have mentioned it only once, but a big focus of our work, like our mobile movement data, that's big data. That's you know, signal data. That's not coming from CRM or sales data. That's coming from connections to the cellular network or apps in phones. And so these data are extremely important, particularly because they help us get more information faster. You know, for us, it's a game changer because, as I mentioned earlier, our core data, our Prism and our demo stats and a lot of our survey data are updated annually. And I'm completely satisfied with that. I think it's not, you know, if you're a statistician or an economist, demographer, you understand which things change enough that you need to change them on a more frequent basis. But for a lot of shopping behavior, for things like emergency, you know, for a lot of social service planning, we want stuff to be more frequent. And so it's been an amazing addition. And if I haven't emphasized it enough, it's a big, big part of our work is harnessing the big data. What I get nervous about is if people think that just raw data feeds from the signal data. There was a debate at the beginning of the discussion about big data, which said, well, if the database is big enough, doesn't matter if it's not entirely representative, it'll all come out in the wash and we can just use the data. What we're finding is that the real exciting opportunities is the combination of the new big data and kind of normalizing it and, you know, controlling it to other kinds of data. And in Canada, ultimately back to things like the census, because I say that official data makes big data usable. You know, we can make sure that for community level and for, you know, subpopulation level, we can make sure that we can have external control totals and we can normalize and weight the data so that it's high quality. And so for me, the development of all this data, not just the mobile phone data, but other data from the Internet of Things and looking at smart cities and all of those opportunities, it's continuing on this, you know, my journey of going from census data to CRM to digital data, now to big data. It's like, it's great, so long as we ensure a high degree of quality in the work. And that's kind of a point I do want to touch on, is that we are quite focused, I think, on privacy and ethics in terms of data and analytics and harnessing data. But I also think it's very important to remember that methodology is key. Like, you know, there's lots of good technology, but if you don't use best practices in terms of statistical processes, in terms of, you know, algorithms, you won't get good data. And people are spending a lot of money on programs and advertising and actual physical location based on data and analytics. So as much as I'm, of course, very, very excited and mindful of the new opportunities, I also think we need to have standards and we need to make sure that the data are being used properly from an ethics and compliance point of view, but especially from a statistical methodology point of view. And that's what we really pride ourselves on. We have 300 people, but, you know, a very large number of them are methodologists and demographers and economists and statisticians and mathematicians. And so we like to make sure that the disruption in data and analytics from big data is accompanied by an adherence to best practices.
That's great to know. I think the thing that I learned the most is that it's not just about all of the data, the volume of the data and the big data itself. It is about having a very rigorous method behind it so that we make sure we interpret it well. Also in the context of some of the traditional data and knowledge and methods of research that we have.
Right. Like I said before, it's not, oh, this kind of data is better than that. It's what's the right data for the right purpose, and how do we really employ standards and best practices to make sure that the data are doing a good job of simulating reality. That's why people want data, is because they want to plan for the future based on what the data show them from the past. And, you know, we know everything else won't be held equal. So we really need to think about what the analytics should cover, what kind of data can help us really understand the trajectory forward, knowing that so many things in society are changing at a different pace, at a rapid pace.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jen. Thank you for joining me today and coming to Geographical Thinking and all the insights and knowledge you share with us today.
It's great. Thank you very much for having me.
Jen Kessel is the president of Environics Analytics, one of North America's leading data analytics and marketing services companies. This podcast is brought to you by Esri Canada, a proud business partner of Environics Analytics. Bye for now.